This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone. We are live at the Lineup Media Group Studios and also on Facebook. This is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Good morning, everyone, from the U.S. and also from all over the world. We are excited about today's show. We've even got callers calling in right away. We just started the show. We'll try to take some calls as soon as we can. And for all you Facebook people, don't forget, go ahead. We love that you're live on Facebook. Go ahead and send us some messages. You want to ask questions, it'd be awesome. And you could also send messages at Baseball Out. Our studio people will be on the lines. Listen, to all your listeners around the world, we want to thank you very much for joining the show. And the ones that are listening that have not joined, please do your best to go to baseballoutsidethebox.com, our website. Click on Stitcher, Google. You'll see the logos there. Click on Join the Show, because that way you'll get updates on every new show that comes up. And it's great getting an update, because you might be, you know, walking your dogs, you get an update, and all of a sudden you can listen to podcasts while you're walking your dogs. I do that. I listen also to podcasts while I'm working out. You can go back and listen to other podcasts that you may have missed. So at the same time, if you can, while you're on there, if you really love the show, it would really help us a lot, because it gets the show out even more. Give us a rating. If you really love us, give us a great rating. If you got issues with the show, send me an email. I take all your emails. Email me at petercaliendo@icloud.com, or you could also email me at info@baseballoutsidethebox. I'll tell you what, this is going to be a great show, and the reason being is it fits perfect with one of our other shows. And I just got back from Canada, one of the best baseball areas around the world, BC Baseball. They have a caravan there that we run for 2 weeks, 15 days. We hit 17 locations, and we get about 300, 400 parents, players, and coaches at every location. And it's an educational program. Puts everybody on the same page. It's an awesome program. So now we know that we're educating all three for the development of that young player. The coach works them at practice. The parent can help at home, and the player can work also on their own with the things they learn. That's what we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to be talking about, first of all, coaching coaches, which is a big talking point of mine. I believe that, you know, if you're going to grow the game anywhere, I don't care if it's in the U.S., around the world, you know, if you don't have the right coaches at the grassroots level, the foundation of our sport, where the young kids are at, you know, the sport's going to die, because kids are going to get bored. They're not going to have fun, because practices aren't fun. And then in games, sometimes it might not be fun in games also, because they're not being successful. And success is an individual thing. You know, you don't have to be successful and always win all the time, but it's an individual thing. You get better every time. You feel good about yourself. Well, all those things have to happen for a youngster to enjoy the game. And in order to do that, you've got to have some great, great coaches at the volunteer level. And it's up to us, whether it's the national organizations, international governing bodies, or whether it's local organizations, we have a major responsibility to help our volunteers get better in being educated, because, you know, they volunteer their time. They're trying to help out. They're not getting paid for this. But at the same time, the volunteer has a responsibility. If you're going to volunteer, you know what? You want to do it right. And if you're going to do it right, then get on, you know, on podcasts, get on shows, get on the internet, try to find some of the best teachers, instructors that you can, and try to learn from them as best you can, and try to learn every day something to make, you know, that day for that youngster a lot better when he's practicing or when he's playing games. And that's how you grow the game. So this is exciting, because we've got one of the best people in the world when it comes to coaching coaches of any sport, of any level. But we're going to talk also a lot about the grassroots level. His name is Bruce Brown. He is the director and owner of Proactive Coaching. And I love that name. Bruce speaks all over the U.S. About character-based coaching and teamwork. Proactive Coaching works with coaches and teams to help intentionally create character-based team cultures. Cultures are important. That's the first thing you need to create. Provide a blueprint for team leadership. Develop confident, tough-minded, fearless competitors, and train coaches for excellence and significance. Now, Coach Braun's been doing this for a long time. He spent over 35 years as a teacher, coach, and administrator. Listen to this, at the junior high, high school, collegiate level. He's been at all levels. He's dealt with all levels when it comes to coaching and also players and obviously parents, which are very important. Now, Bruce has also spoke nationally. He was a presenter at the NAIA Champions of Character program. Gives you an idea how good he is. He gets asked to be one of the presenters here. He continues to speak nationally to athletes, coaches, and parents, school districts, and then it also snowballed into corporation, you know, as his role as director of proactive coaching. Now, Coach Braun, not only does he speak everywhere and he works with everybody in all sports, but he's also written a lot of books. He's authored 11 books, including Teaching Character Through Sports, Creating a Positive Coaching Legacy, 15 coaching booklets, and has produced 12 instructional coaching DVDs, including Redefining the Term Athlete, The Parent's Role in Athletes, Positive Conditioning, and Motivating Your Player. So I love all these topics. We're going to bounce around, talk about with some of the most important ones. Now, proactive coaching, you can go to proactivecoaching.info at the website. Bruce is also on Twitter at Proactive Coach. On Facebook, he's got over 600,000 followers on Facebook. It's incredible. Why do they follow him? Because he's that good, and you're going to see when we talk to him. So let's welcome Bruce Braun. Bruce, how are you? And it's great to have you on the show.
Doing well, Peter.
All right. Listen, it's a thrill to have you on the show. I think we're going to get a lot of great stuff done. The first thing I'd love to start with is let's talk about, you know, I love the name proactive coaching. Let's talk about proactive coaching and explain to our audience all over the world what you've done in 35 years here, because you've done a lot at the grassroots level, all over in all sports and all levels. And tell us a little bit about how you came up with the name also. I think it'd be great to hear.
Well, Peter, I don't consider myself an expert in anything. I'm just somebody who loves coaching, loves kids, and I love the difference that we make in kids' lives. Being proactive for us leads to what we call doing everything with intention. The greatest coaches, the greatest leaders, the greatest coaches, the greatest teams are all intentional. They're done by design. One of our phrases is, excellence is never an accident. It's always done by design. So proactive for us kind of means being ahead of the game, being ahead of, you know, doing things with intention from the very beginning. Intentional coaching, intentional leadership, intentional everything that we do to being intentional. Got started like most, speaking to coaches. I think most coaches, you could probably speak to coaches because their teams have been really successful. And everybody wants to know their secrets and, you know, their technical secrets. So I started speaking for several years at clinics about the technical parts of the games that I was coaching. And I finally, after doing it for 4 or 5 years at some of the bigger clinics, I got to know the directors well enough to be able to go up to them and say, you know, I love being here. I love the technical parts of the game. But the truth is, that's not why we're winning. And they were saying, like, talk to me. So I, you know, said, I think it's this other piece. It's this character piece. It's the intentional character application piece that we use. And they said, you start talking on that. And it just blossomed and grew organically. And it has led to us speaking in person to over 1.6 or 1.7 million people face-to-face. Our target audiences are coaches, athletes, team leaders, parents. It's branched off into businesses, not that that was our intent, but a lot of businesses say we want to function exactly like a healthy, very positive athletic culture. So it's been an interesting process, Peter.
I'll tell you what. You've obviously influenced a lot of people in all kinds of sports. And the thing I really want to address that I want to start with, you know, because I've always believed that in my intro I mentioned it, I've always believed that, you know, the foundation of any sport, if you're going to grow it and you're going to keep kids in the game, especially a game like baseball where it's really, really a tough game from a mental standpoint for young kids to play because there's a lot of failure in it, unfortunately. And they have to learn how to deal with that. You know, the foundation of sports seems to be our volunteer coaches. Address that a little bit, where you think, you know, the game of baseball is kind of going at the grassroots level and where it needs to go to develop more players in the game.
Thanks, Peter. I think you're the expert in the baseball arena by far. we deal with all sports and we deal with all levels. Our primary focus is on high school, college, and professional athletes and coaches. But we do have a youth sport component. It's been interesting for us. I got asked one time, what's the biggest change that you've seen in athletics in your lifetime? And, you know, I think they were anticipating I was going to say something about the professional level of sports or college sports. And I said, you know, I think the biggest change for me is that youth sports have gone in my lifetime from peer control to adult control. And not that that's a bad thing, but that's been a huge change. I mean, growing up for me, you got your buddies, you got on your bikes, rode down to the park and played, and you divvied up the teams, you called your outs, and you know, you made your own calls, you settled your own arguments. If the game got lopsided, you swapped guys around because you wanted to be close. And now I think for an awful lot of our young kids, the first time that they actually play baseball, they've got a uniform on. And it's something that's really changing. And again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that it has been a big change. Another change that I think is, you know, we've seen a lot of positive changes. Kids are learning the game at a younger age. They're getting more opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. They're getting better and better coaching at a younger age. I think youth coaching is starting to take it more seriously than just somebody just showing up and organizing. And I think that's a tribute to what you do in baseball. But it also, I think that one of the things that's hurt baseball it's kind of become a costly sport. Mm-hmm. And that really hurt some people. One of our favorite people we work with is Tim Corbin down at Vanderbilt. We've been working with him for about 6 years now, and he's become a great friend. And it's a model program. But I remember him telling me last year when he came up from Camino Island that one of his, you know, he looks at these kids showing up for baseball camp now, Peter, and they got a backpack with over $1,000, you know, with bats and mitts and, you know, just all the stuff that comes with it. And, you know, we've got to find a way to keep the game open to all kids, as many kids as possible that want to play it. So I think that's one of our biggest challenges.
Yeah, and tell us, you know, when we're talking about volunteer coaches, kind of lay out the groundwork a little bit, what you feel are the most important things a volunteer coach needs to begin with when they're coaching young kids.
They have to know why they're coaching. You know, one of the first things we ask people is, why do you coach? And why do you coach the way you coach? Not that the way you coach is wrong, but simply to analyze and, again, to be intentional about why you are doing this and why you do it the way you do. Most of us start off coaching as we were coached, Peter. And just like most of us start off parenting as we were parented, until we find a better way. And so the most important thing for youth coaches is they really understand the game and their athletes and how to coach both. You know, they understand the game well enough and what kids are going to be able to grasp at the age level they're working with. They understand their athletes, and they know how to coach both the athlete and the game. An awful lot of coaches can coach the game but may not make a connection with the age group that they're coaching or the gender that they're coaching. Some people may connect real well with kids but not know the game. So the ability to teach, to motivate, to plan, to organize, to build a culture, all those things. There's a lot of responsibilities that come with coaching. When you put the word coach on the front of your name, it comes with a tremendous amount of responsibility, and it's not something that, you know, you can just kind of go, oh, this is going to be easy. I think most of us, an awful lot of beginning coaches, go, you know what, this is going to be so fun. I'm going to go out there, you know, I'm going to love them. They're going to win all the time. This is going to be so fun. They're going to be as motivated as I was. And all of a sudden they get into it and they realize, oh my gosh, the time, the energy, the organization, the different personalities, the parents, all the stuff that comes into coaching. Wow, there's a lot to this. So for us, the booklet we have written on that particular topic is called Youth Sports, 4 Keys to a Successful Season. And it's interesting because as many of those as we sell to youth coaches and youth organizations, we sell an equal number to colleges who are teaching coaching 101, and they use it at that level, kind of an introductory thing, how to plan practices, how to plan your parent meeting, how to, you know, how to prepare for the different phases of your season, principles of motivation, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I would think all that applies at any level as a coach, especially if you're starting off. You could be a first-year high school coach. You know, you could be a first-year college coach. And I would, you know, all of that is important. Now, as volunteers, you know, they don't have a lot of time. Communication is so important in coaching. What advice do you have for our coaches out there that, you know, in dealing with parents? Because a lot of times you see coaches, you know, they just don't communicate with parents, and that could be one of the worst things to do.
We have an entire presentation on the on coach-parent relationships and the role of parents in athletics, and that's an interesting presentation too, Peter, because of all, I think we have 18 or 19 different presentations. Of all of our presentations, that's the only one that we did not develop. That came, everything in that presentation came from kids. As a young coach, I had a great mentor coach as a 21-year-old coach, and one of the things he suggested is I started getting feedback from my players and to shorten my learning curve as a coach. So I was asking my players a series of questions about what I could do to make the experience better for them. And when I started reading the answers, it really drastically changed the way I coach. But the more I listened to what kids need to not only perform well, but to have great memories, it changed me as a dad. So when we go give them a presentation or people buy that DVD, the whole thing comes from the eyes and the minds and the hearts of kids on what they need from us as adults, and particularly as parents in this arena called athletics. The parent-coach relationship is not something that can just be dismissed. It's not something it is. You have a very definite. And most of the youth coaches and volunteer coaches are parents and coaches, and the ability to separate those two. You know, when you're in practice, you know, I'm coach. Here's what coach does. You're athlete. Here's what athlete does. As soon as that period of time ends, we go back to father and son, father and daughter, mom and kid. So there's a whole lot to this. The best thing for parents from our presentation, I think one of the key things we talk to parents about is to learn how to release your son or daughter. Learn how to release them to the game, the experience, to the coach. And that came from my kids who went the furthest athletically. And when they came back into my lives, I said, what happened along the way that allowed you to get to that level? And for an awful lot of them, their response was, I had parents who at a very early age released me to the game. And all the successes became theirs, all the situations and problems and challenges became theirs. The parents were there to help guide. They didn't just, you know, disappear. But their role was to guide and to assist the kid to have the experience themselves. So, you know, we talk to parents about red flags that maybe haven't released into the game. And let me put an asterisk by that too, Peter. Before you release your kid to some coach, you better make sure they're safe. They're safe emotionally. Yep. They're safe physically. But I don't mean, you know, being safe doesn't mean they're not starting. Okay, I'm talking about being physically and emotionally safe. But once you know your kid is physically and emotionally safe, and you can trust the adult to coach your child, one of the best things you can do for the kid is to release them. We do this red flag thing with parents, and you'd be amazed at the laughter we get from the audience and the elbowing on the person next to you when we talk about, you know, some red flags they haven't released them. Is if you're sharing their credit when things go well. Yep, all that time we spent working on that curveball in the backyard today, we struck out 12. We didn't. He did. Okay? You try to resolve all the kids' problems. There's only one guarantee in any athletic experience. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be problems. And every time there's a challenge or a problem, it's an opportunity for growth for the kid and for everybody else around. You know, it might be the lesson might be how to get along with a difficult person. It might be how to build respect between teammates. It might be how to respectfully approach an authority figure. You know, there's just how to fight your way through a level of poor performance. There's just all kinds of stuff. And when kids solve those themselves, it develops huge confidence. Another red flag is if you continue to coach them as a parent after they probably know more about the game than you do. And that's probably about, I don't know, these days it's probably about eighth or ninth grade, very honestly. There's a lot of different things. If you build in excuses, If you're more nervous before the game than your kid is, or if the outcome of the game lasts longer with you than it does your kid, I mean, you know, it's Sunday afternoon and you're still pouting and they got over it on Friday night, they're looking at you like, get a life. So just that may cause people to kind of do some introspection and say, have I taken that step for my athlete to kind of back away a little bit? There's a lot more to that presentation. We talk about responsibilities that the parents have and coaches have before the games begin, during the game itself, and after the game. So that's the three focal points that came from the answers that we did for about 30 years of athletes.
Yeah, I love the part where you said that asking questions to kids, you know, I mean, that I think we don't do enough. I agree with you. I think that you know, a lot of coaches can really get a lot out of that. Now, we're on with Bruce Brown, director and owner of Proactive Coaching. You can go to his website at proactivecoaching.info. And also, he's on Twitter at Proactive Coach. We're talking to Coach Brown about coaches, about parents, and I'm not running a subject of parents still. And Bruce, let me throw this at you. Let's take the scenario of a volunteer coach that only practices once or twice a week, maybe once a week. You know, and also working with parents, you know, if their development is only once a week, how does a player get any better? They got to work a little bit on their own, but I would assume there's got to be at home some kind of participation with the parents also. So now the parents need to be a little educated. If they're gonna play catch, let's say in baseball with their kids, or just rolling ground balls, there's got to be some kind of education there. Do you recommend that coaches sit with parents to talk about those things to help them out, so that way they can help their kids and they're all on the same page?
Absolutely, Peter. You know, and if you're only going to practice once a week, first of all, your practice has better be your training is unbelievably organized, unbelievably active. Tons of teaching going on, small groups, short lines, lots of reps, all the things that great coaches do in planning a practice. Boy, if you're limited to 1 hour and a half or 2 hour practice, it's got to be phenomenal. And then the other thing is basically what you'd call athletic homework, that the things that they can work on their own. And I not only would sit down with the parents, I'd put them out in the field, and I would take them through exactly the techniques that you want to have taught, so the vocabulary, the terminology is the same. Even if they may not be able to accurately demonstrate, they can at least verbally teach what's going on, and they can assess when their kid is doing it well. I think, you know, the days of playing catch in the backyard, not only for fun, but also now for instruction. And instructing in a way that supports the coach.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of ways to do everything, and I think it's more important that you know, if you have a difference with a coach on the techniques being taught, you deal with the coach personally, and instead of dealing with your kid and then have the kid be questioning whether the coach or the parent is correct. Or, you know, most kids, especially when they're young, are pleasers, and they're going to do anything they can to please their parents, but that causes some dysfunction in the process of learning. If you've got people giving two different, you know. So if you have a different coach, you don't need to go through your kid. It doesn't help any kid to have people questioning the coach, especially if it's technical.
Hi, you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box. We are on with Bruce Brown, owner and director of Proactive Coaching. I'm looking on Facebook. I see a good friend, Mike Kelly, from BC Baseball, the coaching director there, is online. It's great to see Mike listening to the show. Just want to give a little shout out to Mike. Hope you're doing well. We're continuing our talk with Coach Brown. And we are still on the subject of parents, and because I think, you know, I believe that parents can be an integral part of a youngster's development if they understand that there's communication going on. Bruce, what about, you know, I know you mentioned, you know, acting earlier about talking about how parents should act at games. I'd love to hear all the advice that you might have for parents when they're at games. What's the proper way to act? You know, I know you get excited because, you know, they don't want to see their kids fail. But some advice for our parents, also why they shouldn't be teaching or trying to teach things during games or talk to their kids during games.
During games, our job is number one to be there. You know, although, let me put an asterisk by that, I don't know if you need to attend every single game that your kid ever has. I think sometimes it's good to intentionally miss a few, or to say, you know, hey, this next 3 weeks, tell me two games you'd like me to come to. Because I think sometimes by stepping back even that far, it again becomes a kid's activity. But during the game, what we talk about is the model of behavior that you want them to learn. If we expect our kids to be poised and confident during games, then we as adults need to be poised and confident. One of our phrases that we talk not only to parents about, but also coaches about, is to be the face that they need to see. Be the face that they need to see so that they perform well. They look at us and they draw confidence and relax. If they look at us and we're stressed, they're probably gonna take on our stress. Next thing is to focus on the team and the team's goals and try to get your spotlight off your little darling. Okay, that we're there to support all the kids, and it's a team game like baseball that our focus is wider than just a single spotlight on our own. On our own kid. The next thing is one instructional voice. And kids, this again came from kids, and what kids say, it's confusing. It's confusing for them to try to listen to multiple voices. And that instructional voice needs to be the voice of the coach. And so that everything is simple. We're trying to keep the game and the mental part of the game as simple for kids as possible, to keep their minds clear and clean. And that happens when we are there as supporters and as encouragers, but basically not as coaches. The last thing we talk about during the game is something, it's the only part of our presentation that didn't come from athletes, and I'm not even sure where I got it. I wish I could give somebody credit for this, but we tell people that there's only four roles in any game. Anytime, no matter what game that you go to, no matter what sport, there's only four things you can be. You can be a player, you can be a coach, you can be a spectator, or you can be an official. And so every time you go to a game, make that list of those four things, and everybody gets to choose one. Choose one of those four. I tell my players that. Don't coach, don't officiate, don't watch. Your job is to compete. Okay, that's your only job. I tell my assistant coaches, don't referee, don't become a spectator, and you're too old to play. Coach your position players. Okay? And the same thing is true for opponents. Like I said, if you want to officiate or you want to umpire, man, they're always looking for umpires. Sign up and go do it. You want to coach, volunteer for the job. But the four roles and the specific role is going to make it easier for kids. And that's the bottom line for everything, Peter. Is, you know, every time we post stuff on our Facebook page, we'll have people say, we had an equal number of messages saying, oh, you favor coaches all the time, or you favor parents all the time. The truth is, we don't favor either one of them, and actually, we don't even care. That's not our purpose. Everything we do is filtered through, is this, are these words, are these concepts, are these applications good for kids? And so by filtering through that, no matter what your role is, I think everybody's going to be better off.
That, you know, I love that. I want to welcome Bill Olson. It looks like live on Facebook. Bill, welcome to the show. We are with Bruce Brown, owner and director of Proactive Sports. Word, this is a great conversation. I'm going to continue a little bit with parents, because I remember when I played, my parents were really great. You know, they'd come to games sometimes, but they'd be in locations where I couldn't see them because they know I get nervous. They never really said anything after games, but you know, the stories that I hear constantly, and I would love to hear your advice on this. After ball games, whether, you know, especially when a youngster has a tough time in a game, and they're riding home with the parents, you know, we joke around, we say, go home with mom, because she's going to be a little bit more sympathetic than dad is. But in reality, you know, what do parents do? How do they deal with that? When you know, a youngster just went 0-for-4, had a tough game in the game of baseball, he's 12 years old. What's advice for parents? What to say, how to, you know, handle themselves in those situations?
You know, Peter, again, from our presentation on the role of parents in athletics, when we talked about after the game, what came from kids was the question was, for me, as I was done working with these kids, is what was your favorite memory from this whole experience? And what was your least favorite memory from this whole experience? Because, again, I was asking my players questions, so I'd be a better coach. It had nothing to do with me as a parent or other parent. What was your favorite memory? What was your least favorite memory? And when it came to least favorite memory, oftentimes it was in the car with dad after the game, or in the car with mom after, in the car with my parents after the game. And so it's like, okay, wait a minute. I'm a dad. I'm in the car with my kids as competitors. What's going on? Because whatever is going on that makes it a bad memory, I don't want to be that dad. And so what we got was from kids is, you know, what do kids really need after a game? They need time and space. They need their own recovery. They need to have their own recovery rituals. The more competitive your kid and the more competitive the sport, and the more time and space they require. You know, so basically what we're trying to do here is to give them some of their own recovery and not to try to analyze things, by analyzing everything that they do. One of the messages that sent to kids, that this came from kids, one of the messages that they were getting was, I know a whole lot about this and you don't. And I don't think that's a message we want to send to our kids. I think we need to applaud their efforts. We need to focus on the things that they have control over, which is their effort, their attitude. And we talk about with competitors, control the controllables. And you taught that yourself, Peter. As an athlete, you control the controllables. Well, you don't have control over the weather. You don't have control over the ability of the team. You don't always have control of the strike zone. I mean, you know what I mean? The umpires. The kids need, they need more praise than a push. They need more approval than advice. So really what the kids were telling us was to keep your criticisms in check. Wait until they bring the game to you. You know, wait until they bring the game to you at before you start giving some play. You know, one of the best stories, and this came from speaking at ABCA one time, and I was receiving an award, and the co-recipient of the award was Cal Ripken. It was like, you got to be kidding me. This is, not only was I on the same award, but I got a chance to, they kind of sequestered us. They're trying to protect him, not me. And before we went out and we sat together during lunch, I got a chance to talk. You know, just like you, Peter, you get meet a lot of people who are quote unquote famous. Some are believable and some are fake. He is about as real as you can get. I was as impressed with him as a person as you could be. But anyway, we were talking about this. We got off on this somewhere during lunch, and he said, you know, Bruce, he says, I loved the car ride home with my dad. I said, really? I said, wow. Talk to me. He said, first of all, I knew how much my dad, who was a major league manager, I knew how much my dad knew about baseball. And I wanted to learn everything I could from him that I could. So he said, I love those car rides home. But he said, I think the real reason I liked it is my dad never said anything to me until I asked. And then when I asked, he answered in a way that always left me wanting more. He never overwhelmed me with all of his thoughts and all of his, you know, he kept it pretty simple. And every time we'd finish, I'd say, well, you know, tell me more about that. Or what about this one over here? And he said, he just was magic with his approach of not trying to impress me or overwhelm me or to be openly critical, but yet just to kind of frame it in a way that I not only respect, I just thought that was a great analogy.
Absolutely. That was awesome. And can't wait for our audience to hear that when they go back and listen to the show. We are live on Facebook. We're also, you can listen to us right now on baseballoutsidethebox.com. Welcome, everybody. We are continuing our show with Bruce Brown, Director and Owner of Proactive Coaching. And we are going to jump to the coaching part, Bruce. One of the things you hear all the time about coaching, especially at the volunteer level, is, you know, when do I do the teaching? I can teach in practice, but that depends on how many practices I have. And then come game time, you know, a lot of coaches want to continue to teach game time. There's got to be a balance there, and there's got to be some ways for coaches to understand this a lot better because it's a difficult balance. What's your recommendation there?
Well, great question. And let me take it to a broader perspective, or try to take it to a broader perspective. Let's look at the stages. All right. And then we're going to kind of discuss the coach's responsibility for each of those stages. The first stage of being an athlete is the joy stage. I just love playing. I love this game. And as a coach, one of the very first, I think it's important that we teach our kids to love the game before we teach them how to play it. Teach kids to fall in love with the activity. And so during the joy stage, you know, it's like, I can't wait to get to practice. When I get home, I want to play catch with mom. I just love the game. I can't wait to go back. Then comes the technical stage of being an athlete. Somebody older than me is starting to teach me how to do this. And we lose a few kids at the technical stage, maybe because the coach makes the game too complex. Maybe some kids just don't want to be taught anything. So we might lose a few kids from the transition to joy to technical. All right. Then comes the competitive stage. The scores start to matter. And not just to me, but to everybody around here, the parents, the players. And it isn't just scores, it's my performance determines my playing time. And it isn't just performance against opponents, it's a performance against teammates in practice. The competitive stage is where we lose a ton of kids. And you know, when I was growing up, the competitive stage might have started at about 13 or 14 or 15. And we lost a lot because they weren't talented enough to compete. But we also lost a lot of kids because they started to feel the pressure of the competition and it no longer was fun. After the competitive stage comes a mastery stage, playing beyond high school, you know, college and professional. That's a very select few. But if you look at those four stages of joy, of technical, of competitive, and of mastery, I think what's happened around our country, and again, not that this is necessarily always negative, but there's also not always positive, is the competitive stage, the technical stage, is being shoved down to a younger and younger and younger age to the point where the joy stage lasts about a week in kindergarten t-ball, okay? And then all of a sudden, everything starts to matter and the pressure starts. But what you find great coaches do, Peter, to get back to your question on coaches, the best coaches take that strand of joy and they pull it through right through all the other stages. So when the great coach takes that thread of joy and pulls it through the technical stage, they do it in such a way that the kid says, it's fun for me to learn new things. It's fun for me to change and go through a series of lack of success to achieve something. Great coaches have a way to make the technical stage joyful. Okay? Great coaches have a way to pull the joy right through the competitive stage. I love to go out and compete with my buddies. I love to compare our preparation and training with somebody else. It gives me the other team gives me a chance to measure myself against our own potential. I love to compete. Put me in the tough situations. I want to be the one that's up the bat with the bases loaded and two outs. You know, great coaches find a way to make competition joyful and not stressful. Great coaches at the mastery stage. We work with a lot of coaches at the college and professional level. And honestly, the greatest coaches at that level still find a way to keep joy in the game. You know, the kids still have, the athletes have that joy still with them. This is still fun. This is not, you know, when we take the joy out of it, sports becomes forced labor. You know, and that's not what we want. And the best coaches are what I call positive demanding. It's like the best teacher you ever had, Peter. If you think about the best teacher you ever had, they were tough, nice.
Yep.
They pushed you like crazy, but they did it in a way that made you want to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's what we see when we teach one of our presentations on the impact of trust. We talk about coaching styles. And one of the best things you're ever going to say about a coach is, man, they demanded everything I had, but they did it in a way that made me even love the game and my teammates and the coach even more.
Yeah, that's outstanding. I love hearing that. And you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box. You're also live on Facebook. Good to see Farabuta from Slovakia on Facebook. Also, Dan DiCaprio, former Lewis University baseball coach, pitching coach there. Thanks for joining us on Facebook. And we are Baseball Outside the Box. We love getting your emails, so don't forget, email us at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com, and we will answer all your questions. We're continuing our show with, again, Bruce Brown from Proactive Coaching. Bruce, the next area when it comes to coaches, this is a tough one too. I know a lot of coaches struggle with is, you know, a team doesn't do real well, and they want to have meetings after games, or they do real well and they want to have meetings, you know. What's your advice on meetings after games and why they should meet, if they should meet, or anything else that you could add that could really help our coaches and players, you know, and parents around the world?
Delicate, okay, because, yes, if you have very little teaching time, You have to use that time. But even then, going back to what I learned from kids about what they needed from parents after the game was time and space. You know what? As a career coach and somebody who had practice the next day, my kids didn't want to sit in there and listen to me for half. And then I go and watch a videotape, and I was probably wrong anyway. So I got the next practice that I can bring all that stuff back in. So meetings need to be short. They need to be positive. They need to end on a positive note. If you have individual kids you need to work with on specific things, do it with the individual kid, not with the whole group. I think if I was in a coaching situation where I had one training session a week and multiple games, which I think is another kind of a fallacy with what we're doing in some ways, I honestly think that we'd be better to have 50 training sessions and 15 games than 50 games and 15 training sessions. The training, teaching kids how to train, how to prepare, and the actual skills of the game. When you have a coach that is a great practice organizer, the practices are so, so critical and important and allow so much growth that then the games give you a chance to kind of test yourself. And I think sometimes we get that backwards, when we're doing this. But I think that you listen to your kids and you watch your kids and you read your kids. Sometimes it might be critical to have them speak what's on your mind right away and to listen to what they have to say. But there may be a lot of times where it's best just to real quick, positive, uplifting, and get them out of there because that's what they need. And like I say, if you're going to bring them back together. Hey, while you're mentioning people, I'll shout out to Mike Kelly, too, up here in our neighbor up in British Columbia. We live on Kamano Island, about halfway between Seattle and Vancouver, B.C. So I'm with you on him and what a tremendous job he's doing up there in B.C.
Absolutely. You know, as we continue, some of the things, and I know coaches can struggle with this, and I know it's not easy. I want to just stay on it a little bit, especially when it comes to games. You know, where's that line of, you see, you know, especially in baseball, ball hit, kids are doing something, you know, they're going after the ball, they're not hitting a cutoff man, they're not doing some things they should be doing. You know, should that be coach be communicating loud on the field while the game's going on? You just let them play, read out, you know, just have them do their thing, read it, what happens, and then after the game, talk about the situations. Maybe you're writing down notes, maybe you have a tape recorder, you know, to keep your notes, however you do it. What's your recommendation there?
Well, put yourself in the kid's position. Do you want to be corrected loudly, publicly? You know, and no, most people don't. Will you learn better from that, a public pronunciation of a mistake you just made, or will you learn better in more of a private conversation? And I think dealing with kids' mistakes, it's a critical thing. And I think we need to, as all of us as adults, parents and coaches, we need to ask yourself, are we prepared for every scenario that might happen in baseball? You know, the kid has a good game individually, but the team loses. The kid has a bad game and the team wins. The kid has what appears to be a bad performance, but really he goes 0-for-4, but he has 4 great at-bats. You know what I mean? The whole, can we take every scenario that we're going to be faced with, and again, getting back to being proactive and intentional, and say to myself, I'm going to think about how I'm going to react to all these situations prior to being in that situation. You know, I watched I just stopped by a park and watched a local Little League team playing one time. I didn't even know anybody there. That's an interesting thing. Go somewhere where you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
Go watch a game where you don't know anybody. You'd be amazed how good the referee, how good the umpire is. Okay. Just you don't get caught up in the person is. But this little kid was a bat and he swung at a pitch that was way too high. And from the dugout comes, you just swung at a pitch that was 2 feet over your head. Well, you know what? I think the kid probably already knew that.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't correction. It wasn't anything that was going to improve performance. And if anything, it added more stress and embarrassment to the kids. So I think, you know, how coaches deal with their kids' mistakes is gigantic for trust. And I don't want to get too far off on this, but on our presentation and booklet on impact of trust, one of the things, it's about what allows coaches to be trusted. And one of the critical elements in there is how we deal with our players' mistakes. Okay? And if you think what coaches are asking kids to do in this arena called athletics, we're constantly asking our kids to improve, to learn new strategies, to learn new concepts, to learn new skills, and once they learn it, to do it quicker, and to then to be able to do it at game speed. So we're constantly asking our kids to challenge themselves with things they haven't been able to do before. And what does that require? That requires failure. There are very few kids that get anything on the first try. Very few of any of us get anything on the first try. So it requires failure. And it isn't just failure, Peter. It's public failure. We're asking our kids, hey, go out in front of these 500 people and fail. You know, even practice is public failure. I've got to, you know, go over here and do this in front of your teammates and fail. And then we're asking them to be mentally tough. Hey, PRP, play, recover, play. Hey, play, make a mistake, recover very quickly because you're mentally tough, and get your head back in the moment. Okay, that's what we're asking our kids to do. And we're asking them to do it in a public emotional arena called athletics. And so for us, one of the quickest ways as a coach that you can develop a trust level between yourself and a player is how you deal with kids' mistakes. So very quickly, and this isn't a tiny part of the presentation, but as a coach and as a spectator, when you're going to make a mistake, it is. Was it a mistake made with carelessness and lack of effort or lack of focus or lack of attention? That's a behavioral problem. That's another whole presentation. Was it a mistake, full effort and full attention? The kid was doing everything they could as well as they could and as well as we had taught it to them. If that's the case, you know, and they're doing everything at full attention, find a way to dignify it. Dignify those errors. You're giving kids permission to fail. Good idea. Next time, step with your left foot. Good idea. You know, small instructions. Good idea. You're on the right path. I see how hard you're trying. Let's move forward and take this next step performance-wise. And I think that is a gigantic thing for kids. Have you ever played for a coach, Peter, when you made a mistake, you came out?
Oh, yeah. Or the opposite, where I wanted to pitch, and the coach didn't think I could pitch, so he let me pitch, and I gave up like 6 runs, and he left me in there for another 6 runs. I gave up 12 runs.
You know, but if you look at games like basketball, where there's all, like free substitution, and you play for a coach that every time you make a mistake, how do you play? You know, unless you're a doggone street tough kid who just can kind of dismiss all this, I'll tell you how you play. You play nervously, tentatively, fearfully.
Yep.
Okay, that's not the way I want my athletes compete. I don't want my athletes competing fearfully and nervously and tentatively. Okay, and so what I want my kids playing is fearlessly. If I want to know if a coach is trusted, go to practice and watch how much full speed, full attention, failure the kids are willing to make in front of you.
Absolutely. You are on baseball, listening to Baseball Outside the Box. Welcome, Mark Littell, former Major League player on Facebook. Good to see you. We continue with Bruce Brown. Bruce, you know, one of the things you hear all the time is it's up to kids to, you know, have a good attention span. But what about the coach? How much responsibility does he have to grab a kid's attention, you know, to make it fun and interesting so that way they're learning? I remember the best college coaches I had or best college teachers I had were the ones that made it entertaining in the classroom because, man, I really paid attention. So what advice do you have for coaches there?
And it's not all the same for every kid. And so one of our concepts is, every kid has a story. You need to know it. Okay? Because knowing their story is going to give you insight on what is going to motivate that particular kid. And not that as a teacher or as a coach, you model the same behaviors that you want your kids to exemplify. So if you want an enthusiastic, highly motivated, completely focused team, then they better be able to see that in you. That should be part of your coaching style. You know, we will reflect the aggressiveness or the passiveness of our leader on teams. And so, yes, it's critical. Motivation, the concepts of motivation. We have an entire presentation of booklet on motivational strategies for coaches and how to take things that are not inherently fun and to turn them into fun things. And that doesn't mean that all coaching, all participation in athletics is going to be just joyful. But you know what? Great coaches find a way to make hard work fun. let them make great preparation fun. So that becomes a source of pride. You know, getting into preparation even more, you know, we get a lot of stuff on confidence. And the truth is, you know what true confidence is, Peter? It's preparation. Confidence comes from preparation. You know when you're going to go in to take a math test, if you've done a great job studying for the math test, you can't wait to get in there. And it's athletically. So we really focus on preparation as one of the keys to confidence. And when you are successful, to attribute the success back to what we did in preparation. That coaches cannot make their practice planning and their training sessions important enough. I mean, it stems from that. And if you're not doing a great job there, you can't expect any kind of consistent performance during game day.
All right, I've heard you say this, and I really want to address this part. I heard you say coaches should have standards, not rules. Really dive into that, because I think that's an interesting comment.
That is something we talk about in several presentations. Standards instead of rules. If you think about rules box you in. They sometimes make decisions about things that aren't in the best interest of team or individual. I think rules take away your discretion. And I think as a coach, as a leader of any organization, you have to rely on and trust your discretion. And so here's what we say, the difference between rules and standards. You know what kids do with rules, people. They question them, they challenge them, they drive you right to the edge. But you know what kids do with standards? Kids will rise to your standards where they question you on your rules. You know, especially your standards when they love and trust the person who's asking them to rise to those standards. And so the standards, not rules thing is there's a difference between the two. And even when we're talking about culture and developing culture, we develop, first of all, what's called core covenants. Here's what we believe, so therefore this is what we'll see. Then we start attaching behaviors to those. So the intentionality of your culture is completely spelled out. And those all come back to standards. What do we stand for? What will it look like? But you know what? I don't know if you've read the book Start With Why. I was working on an NFL team, and the head coach gave me that book and about four or five other ones. And that is one of the best books I've ever written or ever read. So Start With Why is we, as coaches, you need to have a great why. Why do we train this way? Why do I teach it that way? Because, you know, kids are going to ask you, and the better why that we all have, why do you coach? Why do you coach the way you coach? The better why we have, the fewer times it's going to get asked. Pretty soon, people who are very intentional and with their why they do things the way they do, pretty soon the kids realize, you know what? This person is so organized and has thought this through so much, there's no sense asking them, hey, you know, no matter what he does, just do whatever he says, just do it, because you know he's got a good reason. And that adds trust. You know, in a high trust situation, and we talk about high trust and low trust cultures and the signals for those. In a low trust situation, whether it's adult to adult or adult to peer or peer to adult, no matter what kind of communication, in a low trust situation, you can measure your words as carefully as you want, and somebody's still going to misinterpret them. In a high trust situation, you can say the stupidest thing in the whole world, and the kid will go, you know what? I know what he really meant. We're good. And that is, again, trust is something that has to be intentionally developed. You cannot assume trust. So I think that's another change that I've seen, too, in our culture, Peter. I mean, I was raised by my parents to trust adults. You trust that teacher. Don't come home complaining about the teacher. You trust that coach. You listen, you just do what he says. You trust the policeman. And I thought that was the way I was raised. And I think a lot of kids these days are being raised to question or maybe even distrust authority. So when coaches walk into a situation, just because they have that word in front of their name, coach, doesn't mean you trust it. You cannot automatically assume trust. I think that book that I wrote might be the most important thing I've ever written as far as coaches are concerned is again, to be intentional about the things that are going to allow you to be trusted, because if you have two teams on the same playing field and one they're anywhere near equal in talent, and one is a high trust culture and one is a low trust culture, I know where I'm putting my money. I'm telling you, the high trust culture is going to get you every time.
Sure.
And so again, everything we teach and everything we've written about and everything we present on, two things I would hope from. Number one, it has application. Coaches are not philosophical people. Mm-hmm. They're application people. So everything we speak on, the coach will go listen and go, I can take that home today and I can use it to improve the performance or the behavior of that kid. I can take that today and I can go back and develop, to help develop a better culture. And the second thing that I think, if you're speaking of coaches and the real competitors, they better help. And I don't think there's anything we talk about, whether it's defining standards or whether it's intentionality of culture or changing behaviors or developing trust. Every single thing that we speak on and write about, we should listen and go, you know what? That's going to help us on the scoreboard.
Absolutely. All right. You're listening to Baseball Outside the Box, also live on Facebook. Welcome, everybody, from around the world. We're on with Bruce Brown, owner and director of Proactive Coaching. This has been a great show. Bruce, we're coming to the end, and we do have a time limit, but I just, you know, I want to throw, I guess it's not a curveball because you've been in this, you know, in this teaching for over 35 years. You've worked with a lot of people. The curveball, I guess, which I think might is a curveball a little bit, I want you to address for our audience, because we have a lot of organizations also on, and listen to the show, not just here in the U.S., but also in around the world. And, you know, I mentioned earlier coaches' education being so important. I'd just like for you to address, if you ran a league, a baseball league, specifically baseball, and coaches' education was important, address a little bit about what would be some of the things you would do. I know there's time limits. You know, there's only so much time that volunteer coaches have to learn, but where would you start and what would you emphasize with your coaches throughout the season?
Great question, Peter. And I think, you know, first of all, the very best coaches we ever were trying to get better every day. They're constantly trying to give up. I don't care how successful they've been. It's something that separates the great ones. Is they're constantly looking for, how can I do this better? How can I do that quicker? How can I be more efficient with my time? So, you know, I think coaching basics and coaching 101, and I think a lot of people that get into coaching haven't really analyzed that, and to start with just how to plan a practice, how to plan a parent meeting, how to motivate individual kids, how to build an intentional team culture that includes all stakeholders, with athletes, coaches, and parents all along the same thing, that you know, the coaching education, that is primarily what we do. And you know, it's funny because there's only one stage of coaching that kind of blocks that out, and that's coaches who are in what we call status quo. I'm as good as I need to be. And that's the saddest stage to be in if you're a coach. Because I'm as good as I need to be. I don't need to go to clinics. I don't need to read. I don't need to analyze what I'm doing. I don't need to get feedback from my players. And basically, those people get left behind because they become irrelevant. As soon as you stop growing, you become irrelevant. In a competitive arena, and you know that. So
sure.
I think I would have, if I was an organization, I'd have a coaching library. I'd have a coaching library of books. And if anybody wants a suggestion, they can email me, and I can send them all the leadership books that I would recommend from all different writers. They'd have a coaching library of books, of booklets, of pamphlets, of DVDs, all kinds of things. So when you're running across an individual coach that may have a real strong technical knowledge of the game, but not good in relationships, you can give them the information on that particular thing. You get somebody who maybe has really struggling with getting, you know, dealing with parents or getting parents to buy in, and give them that information so that you can work, you know, individually. What every coach is going to come into your program with different needs for you. And so I think it's a matter of leadership of the organization saying, we're going to provide information on any one of these topics, but in order for you to be here, you need to be anxiously and intentionally growing as a coach.
You know, and I'm with you, and because I really do believe that organizations have a responsibility, especially to our volunteer coaches, because they're spending a lot of time with these kids throughout the season, you know, practice, games, you know, sometimes meetings, And I think we need to support them because, again, as volunteers, they need as much support as possible. But also on the flip side, as you said, you know, coaches have a responsibility, whether you're a volunteer or not. You should do it right, and you should get smarter every time. That's why we started the show, to try to help coaches as best we can. The show's free. You know, so we love all our listeners that are on. And Bruce, here's the last questions I have.
Can I always add something to that? If you're going
sure.
to, if you're going to provide training for your coaches, it better be great. Because if you're
yep.
already volunteering all your time and you go to some meeting and it's just kind of mediocre presentation or mediocre information, you're thinking, you know, why am I doing this? So when you do provide the training, they need to walk out of there going, whoa, was that worth it? Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and you know what? You're absolutely right on that. I'm glad you brought that up. And we're going to have Bruce Brown, all his information on proactive coaching will be on our show notes at the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. So you'll be able to email him. You'll be able to go on Twitter, on his Facebook, communicate with him directly. I highly recommend that you contact Bruce to, you know, have him come out, talk to your organization, your leagues, you know, help him maybe even set up ways to, you know, develop the coaches. And of course, he's got all the materials that you need that you can purchase on his website. So I highly recommend that. The last thing, Bruce, I wish we could continue the show. We may have to have a second part to this because there's so much to it. I heard you say, and I bring this comment up because baseball is not an easy sport for young kids. And as we mentioned, there is failure there more than, you know, than most sports. But I believe all young kids can get better. And you said you should not have to be good to get good. Boy, let's end it on that because I think that's a strong comment for young kids.
Every kid should benefit from athletic experience regardless of talent. And you know, talent's easy and the spot and fun for a kid to have. But the character part of the experience, you know, the talent eventually fades. But you shouldn't have to be good to get good out of the activity. What I was saying there was, you know, your last kid in your bench, it's should feel that the experience was worthwhile, beneficial, and inspiring, you know what I mean? And that gets down to, again, coaches relating to all kids, creating a culture where all kids are welcome, creating a culture where mistakes are acceptable as long as they're done full speed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so that it isn't just your most talented kids that benefit from the experience, but any kid, because I think, Peter, you know the statistics, that I think it's 72% of kids are done with organized sport at age 12.
Yeah,
and so
that's terrible.
They haven't enjoyed and got a chance to be part of something bigger than themselves and to have a coach who they trusted and learn what it is to be a great teammate, then they're not going to get another chance. And it isn't, although sports isn't the only activity. I mean, you can learn the same thing in band or choir or debate or whatever other team situations. But you shouldn't have to be the best player. It shouldn't be just the best players to gain life lessons from the athletic experience.
You know what, Bruce? Love it. Absolutely love it. That is the end of our show. First of all, I want to thank you for your time, for being on Baseball Outside the Box. And I hope to see you somewhere in the U.S. or anywhere in the world one day. Talk to you soon, Bruce. All right, that is Bruce Brown, director and owner of Proactive Coaching. You can go to his website, proactivecoaching.info, and also his Twitter at Proactive Coach. We will have all his information on our show notes on the website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. And please don't forget, first of all, thank you to all our Facebook listeners. Thanks for being on today. Thank you for everyone around the world for being on the show. Remember, try to share our show with everybody through social media. Go to our Twitter at Baseball Out. Check us out at facebook.com/baseballoutsidethebox.com and email me with any questions, anything about the show or any questions about the game of baseball at info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. It's all on our show notes on the website. We thank you for being on the show. Don't forget, coaches education is one of the best things to help develop youth sports, to help put kids in the game. Keep getting smarter as a coach. Keep listening to the show. Go to Bruce Brown's website. You will learn so much there.
And I want to thank everybody around the world for being on the show. God bless you, and we will see you on the next show. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, Baseball Outside the Box. God bless you all.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.